Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of In the Black. We're here today. This is Mike. I'm here with Troy, and we're here to talk about inflation again. I know we had just touched on that in the last pod, but the new CPI numbers have just come out. By CPI, I mean Consumer Price Index. Inflation has risen to 7% year over year. That means that essentially your purchasing power of your dollar has eroded by 7%. And we all know that that is a little misleading because that takes a basket of goods that have been predetermined by the government to measure inflation against. But if you look at inflation, how it affects, let's say, energy costs or housing costs, you know, it's a lot higher. Especially if you look at things like automobiles, if you were in the market to buy a car this year, you're paying significantly higher for the same vehicle that you would have paid for last year. Matter of fact, in some instances, a used car costs more than a new car, which is outrageous. And that's because used cars readily available, while a new car, there's a chip shortage. And, you know, that really, really has kind of made that whole auto industry, that kind of market kind of in a unique situation, where if you can get the car now, versus maybe getting a car, if you go and try to buy a new car at a dealership and they'll tell you it'll take 2 months, but it takes 3, 4, or 5 months because of a semiconductor chip shortage, it's driving the price of the used car market through the roof. So we're seeing prices explode pretty much across all consumer products. There's really nothing that has gone down in price. Everything has risen in price, from consumer staples you'll buy at the store, like I said, to energy. You notice that you might be paying more for electricity or gas now, like natural gas. And of course, gas at the pump, oils has risen. It's being squeezed by OPEC. They pretty much just said they're trying to get all their money back from the pandemic when things were shut down. So they're inflating their prices higher as well. And it's going to get tight, because even though the Fed is acting, what they're doing is they're raising interest rates. They say they're going to do 3. Some people even think it'll be 4 interest rates hikes this year to help combat inflation. They're also going to start unloading some, tapering the purchases of assets on their balance sheet and start unloading some of those assets as the year goes on. But it's a very fine tightrope that they have to walk on, because if they're too hawkish and they go in too hard with raising interest rates and selling off assets, then they'll have the risk of turning sending the economy into a downward spiral and possibly into a depression. So they can't just jack up rates astronomically. They have to be smart about how they do it. But also at the same time, if they don't act quick enough, inflation will continue to rise. Matter of fact, some economists believe that inflation will continue to rise this year, even with what the Fed has announced that they're going to do with tapering of asset purchases and raising of rates throughout the year. Some economists still think that there's too many factors in play that will keep inflation high. They're looking at supply chain, as we know, and as many of you probably seen news articles about how the ports are so backed up, we can't get merchandise. If you go and you look on the shelves, some of the stuff that you might normally buy is no longer there and available. We're seeing a lot of empty shelves, especially through this holiday season. There was a lot of empty shelves, or things get stocked, and if you're not there, one of the first people in the store, they're gone, and then you have to wait for the next shipment to come in, because those shipments, even though they might be getting some, they're not getting as much as they used to. And, you know, and that's predicted to maybe ease a little bit, but it still be a factor for this year, which is going to continue to raise the price of those commodities. Also, you're looking at rent prices and prices for homes continuing to go up. With rent, that's a good indicator of inflation. If rent prices continue to rise, that's always been correlated with inflation. So we're seeing rent rose another 0.4% month over month, which is, you know, doesn't bode well for, you know, falling inflation prices. Also, if you look at the prices of food, they're predicting a spike in fertilizer costs. And, you know, bad weather, as we face, as many of you know, climate change, whether you believe it or not, as you can go outside and look, you know, the weather has been very wonky for the past few years. They're saying that will also impact food prices, impacts the growers. So all that, you know, rolls downhill to get to you as a consumer, and now you're paying for more. Matter of fact, I remember I went to McDonald's the other day, and I was looking at the dollar menu, and there's nothing on the dollar menu that's a dollar anymore. Nothing at all. Right? I don't even know why they call it a dollar menu anymore. There's nothing literally on there that costs a dollar. And don't think that those prices are going to roll back. What they're hoping for, actually, is they're hoping that the prices that you see have spiked will slow in their inflation, slow in their rising. But they don't really predict a lot of prices for goods and commodities to go back to what they were, you know, pre-pandemic levels. So these higher prices that you're seeing, a lot of them will stick around. Maybe some of the auto market, you know, the used cars, that'll probably come down as more cars become available. But don't expect those new cars to dramatically drop off in price, because they're getting away with charging more. So from a business standpoint, those businesses, you know, less and less incentivized to do so, they're not gonna start charging less for those products. So as we look at it now we're looking at, with all this data that we're getting in, we're seeing that inflation has risen once again, and we're seeing that it's predicted to probably continue to rise despite the Fed trying to rein it in. And by rein it in, they mean slow the growth of inflation. You know, they're not going to go backwards, if you will. So the inflation's at 7% year over year. What they're trying to do is just slow that rate of growth in that inflation number, but they're not trying to take it back a negative, 7%. These prices are here to stay. So with that in mind, we have to be more diligent than I think, we ever were, with how we invest our money, how we protect our purchasing power, and find safe assets where we can move our money into to preserve our wealth. Because if you're just letting your money sit in a bank account, unless you're growing your earning power, by 7% or more year over year, which most people are, I would say I would highly advise you go and try to negotiate a raise this year and point to this inflation data and say, hey, cost of everything just went up. If you don't effectively pay me 7% more than I made last year, I'm making less money. I just became poor. But I doubt many employers are going to be willing. They might. I do expect that the employers will give out raises maybe a little bit higher than they normally do, but I don't expect it to be 7% across the board. So very highly unlikely. So we have to be smart about how we protect our wealth moving forward, Troy.
Absolutely. It's a tough one, man, because the question is, where does the end in sight with this? What are the primary factors driving it and things of that nature? This inflation that we see now, to me, all but guarantees that we are not going to see another stimulus. We're not going to see more of that aggressive help that some people would argue needs to come from the federal government. Because now you already have people on really both sides who yell about government spending, the national debt, and its impact on inflation. Right now, we have a lot of people who are arguing what is causing inflation, because they're saying you have companies with higher prices for their goods. Meanwhile, their CEOs are still cashing in million-dollar bonuses and things of that nature. And I think a lot of that frustration honestly comes from a lack of understanding of the corporate structure, how profits work. A lot of people see CEOs make a lot of money and they assume that's just taking clean out the profits, and really they're exercising stock options. Even though if we continue along this economic pace, stocks are going to be impacted as well. We can really dig into that one, possibly on another pod. That being said, when you have workers who have been behind the eight ball when it comes to wages, people have been in need of increased wages over time. I remember, Mike, when we were children, and it was my dream just to make it to six figures as income. Like, that was just the gold standard, six-figure income, get a six-figure job. And that is still, to this day, a blessing head and shoulders above what your average American makes and earns. But rapidly, we're seeing in many places, like, where we came from, I know six-figure earners, there in Washington, D.C., oh, they're still struggling because rent's now $3,000. It's now $3,200, and the price of gas is nearly, $4 a gallon and things of that nature. We're no longer getting ahead from a middle to upper middle class. And where does that leave the legitimate middle class and below? You know, like how are people supposed to buy their first homes when your average home cost is now about to begin crossing $500,000 and the restrictions on credit are higher than they've ever been? We're not even letting people borrow money, even if they can afford to pay. We see people, you know, talk about how they, you know, if you can't afford a $2,000 mortgage, here's $2,500 in rent, and none of that impacting your credit. This is all a cascading, feels like a deck of a house of cards, that just feels like we are just one step away from massive collapse, massive reform, things of that nature. When we began, we as a nation began seeing this fight for $15 as a minimum wage. You know, that it's been well over 5-6 years now. I'm not sure if like $15 minimum wage is kind of low on a scale now, especially if you live in New York, LA, Chicago, you know, Washington, D.C. It is tough. And really most any other areas. Heck, we're here in the North Texas area, the DFW, the Dallas-Fort Worth metropolitan area. Man, prices have exploded here. In the, you know, I've been eyeballing moving here for about 6 years now, since about, you know, and then we've lived here for over 3 years now, and just watching the prices explode here, our gas, our groceries, man, you know, we love doing our brisket here, you know, and barbecue here in Texas. Have you seen meat prices, Mike? The price of chicken, the price, and I shop at Costco now, you know, so we're talking about getting that, you know, buying in bulk discount, and it is punishing out there when it comes to the price. We have to find ways, as your average Joe, middle class, and really everyone in between, to protect our income and protect our investments. We have to, because we will be left behind. Because I used to sit there and hope that, okay, these rising home prices, I haven't bought my house yet. Actually, that was a huge mistake. I remember waiting and saying, okay, let me get to know the area before I buy a house. Man, I should have just bought one. It didn't matter where. I'd be up on it right now. We have to make smart decisions and be very careful to protect our income and be very careful to ride this wave, because we're not going back. I think you always said that, Mike. You know, I was sitting there hoping that we would recess some. Where's the end in sight when the pandemic has, you know, we're setting new records for cases every single day, and people are looking for higher wages, and people are looking for help from a government that has spent itself out of control. You know, I can't help but turn on, you know, a documentary talking about, I was watching, they were talking about Tokyo and why it's so well planned with their mass transit, and they were spending $200 billion a year in public spending for Japan across the board, obviously focused on their capital. That's where the most people live in their country. Japan's roughly the size of California, $200 billion in public spending. Meanwhile, we don't come close to those numbers. We have not built an infrastructure up that will protect people en masse. So we see crumbling roads, crumbling bridges, crumbling mass transit, crumbling, you go look at New York City and what's going on, flooding tunnels, things of that nature. And so now they're trying to get an infrastructure spending bill, and we're not going to get the most out of it simply because the prices of everything involving construction have gone through the roof. We've waited too long. And then we continue to spend as a nation about $700 billion. We're actually going up on our defense spending, even though we have literally ended a war. We are in need, desperate need of a correction of sorts with our economy, with wages, our national spending and debt. The value of our money is falling through the floor. And that's before we get into the reality of the job market, because there are jobs that are going away and have gone away in this pandemic, Mike. They're not coming back. My Walmart, you know, I remember I used to pick on them for they have 20 some odd, 25 registers up front. And they used to only have, you know, 5-6 cashiers working. You'll be lucky to see 5 or 6 people in the entire store, Mike. It is nothing but self-checkout lines. They're pushing their apps that, you know, you go off into Sam's Club, you scan it yourself, you can pay on your app and walk out and show one person at the front. There are jobs that are going away. We are watching them build robotic semi-tractor trailer trucks, and we are watching Amazon build its warehouse out with automatic robots that can lift and move entire stacks and pallets. These used to be forklift work operators. The truck drivers, huge backbone of the economy. When we're talking about the price of goods and struggling wages and inflation, all of it's connected, what's going to happen in 10 and 20 years, Mike, when most of these jobs, you talk about $50 minimum wage, you're not going to be able to get a job in a Taco Bell, in a McDonald's, in a Burger King, in a Wendy's, because they're going to be replaced by touchscreens and robots. We have a economic apocalypse almost on our hands. You know, I don't mean to fearmonger and raise things like that, but it is a serious problem that requires so much protection on ourselves and a lot of excellent government-wide policy and planning.
And those are all very solid points. As we look, like you said, as we look at the shift in the job market, the shift in jobs are moving to more virtual spaces. We're looking at jobs shifting to more less intensive on some areas of manual labor. Heck, they're even trying to develop tractor trailers that would drive themselves. I know Tesla has a prototype out there that they're trying to put out that has autonomous driving. As much as certain jobs will go away, new jobs will come and take their place. So you need the people who design those trucks, who design the software, who update the firmware and hardware on those vehicles, do the maintenance on them. So you're going to see the market shifting. And you have to be, especially if you're in one of those industries that can be sensitive to automation, you have to be kind of on the lookout for when that trend is going to hit your job place, because you want to be ahead of the curve and, not come to work one day with a letter in your locker saying, hey, we're terminating your position, in favor of XYZ. But as going forward, as looking into the broader way that the everyday person can kind of protect themselves against rising inflation, uncertainty in the markets, there's certain, things that we have learned over time. One, that fiat currency, and by fiat I mean government issued currency, constantly debases. And by debases, I mean it constantly loses value because it constantly makes more of it. The United States dollar is not backed at anything. It's not backed in gold. It's backed in the confidence of the United States as a nation, right? That's what makes the United States dollar the world reserve currency. But as you noticed, the world's is actually kind of losing confidence in the United States itself. And that could have pretty serious ramifications, especially if we look at, there's other places to safe havens to put your money instead of just keeping it in cash. During the pandemic, there have been a record amount of people saving up cash, especially money if you got some government stimulus checks. People were sitting on cash, and now they're starting to release that cash. And as I mentioned in the last pod, 40% of the money in circulation was created in the last 2 years. So all that money has to go somewhere. They constantly create money, and it kind of got themselves into a spiral where they can't just stop issuing money altogether. They can try to slow it down, but they can't stop it. So now you have all this money circulating, and it's constantly debasing your buying power. Right, your purchasing power is constantly being eroded because they're constantly making more of it. Right, it's just simple economics. Supply and demand. If there's a limited supply and a high demand, the price goes up. But if there's almost an infinite supply, which essentially the U.S. dollar is, because it can create out of thin air, it's constantly going to lose value. Right, and that's what we're seeing, that value of the dollar, put against any commodity. We're seeing those commodities rise in price, but the dollar fall in value. So the things I would say, and these are not, we're not financial advisors, but things that, we do that I would suggest that you look into. I call it my golden triangle, which is investing in stocks, real estate, and crypto. Those are all asset classes that if you look out and zoom out, especially, they have gone up tremendously over time. All of them have different risk tolerances, with crypto, of course, being the riskiest. With stocks, you know, if you're playing, if you want to be conservative in the stock market, you just throw it into an index fund like that tracks the S&P, like VOO. And you can kind of be somewhat conservative there, but you're at the behest of the market. But overall, if you zoom out, the market, you know, always trends up, right? And then you have, of course, real estate. It's a hard asset, one of the, you know, literally, you know, time tested, you know, asset classes there is in the history of mankind. You know, land will always have value, you know, housing, dwelling will always have value. And if you just look at it, once again, zoom out and look at the cost of housing, is always goes up over time. You know, we might have a bubble or a correction, but even if you account for that, the price of housing will still continue to go up, given if you zoom out long enough to look at it, look at the housing prices and the prices of land. So a good place to start, especially even if you're not trying to buy a, you know, investment property, just having your money into your own personal house is a somewhat an investment, because you're buying a hard asset that'll go up over time. You're buying also assets that you can borrow against. So another thing, we'll probably get into this later, is, you know, when you have assets, you can borrow against your assets. When you borrow against your assets, you know, you're borrowing, that distribution of that loan is tax-free money. So that's what a lot of rich and wealthy people do, is they don't sell their assets for money. They borrow against them, right? And this is because assets go up over time in value. And what we just learned, I hope you learned today, the biggest thing to take away from this is that the dollar goes down in value over time. So of course, I would want to borrow, you know, money today at a fixed interest rate, because I know that that money is going to lose value over time, but I know my asset is going to go in the reverse and go up in value over time. So as I'm even slowly paying back this loan, I could probably refinance that loan in 10 to 15, maybe even 20 years, and pull even more money out, right? Because that asset has gone up in value over time, and that fixed interest rate that I had for that loan, for whatever dollar denomination you decide to take it out, that money is now worth a lot less in future dollars than it is today. You know, that's back to my example when I say, like, you know, your parents used to say, your grandparents used to say, oh, a Hershey's bar used to cost 5 cents. You know, it's $1.50 now, right? Because the purchasing power of the dollar constantly erodes over time. So what might look expensive today, fast forward 15, 20, 30 years, we'll go back and we'll be, you know, oh man, I remember when you can used to be able to buy a single family home for $500,000. Now it's $1 million, you know, off break for just the regular home. You know, stuff continues to go up, you know, in price over time, because the value of the dollar is constantly depreciating. So when you start looking at it in those terms, right? And it's important to look at money as a tool, right? We don't even call it an asset, it's a tool, right? Assets are assets, like something that can grow in value over time is an asset. But money is a tool that if used properly, can build wealth for you and your family over time. The worst thing to do with your money is just to let it sit there, not do anything with it. I would recommend everybody, and my friend Sean actually gave me this book called The Richest Man in Babylon. And that he gave me that book maybe, I think that was about 3 years ago at this point. And that totally changed the way that I viewed money. It totally changed. I went from looking at, you know, money as an asset, which I kind of used to look at it as money as just a tool, right? To maybe, you know, to accumulate assets and grow your wealth. And we start looking at money as a tool, right? And you stop, you know, looking at money as something that you need to hoard and hold and not do anything with and be super safe with all the time. You realize that, man, there's a lot of things I can do to maximize the capital I have to increase the quality of life, you know, not just for you, but, you know, hopefully for your loved ones as well. That's a excellent book to read, The Richest Man in Babylon. And it will slowly start changing the way that you view your money. You know, I think, I can't remember, Ava or Aya. Anyway, it was this commercial and I used to see it on TV, and, you know, the commercial had, origami money right? It's like bunnies and, you know, money folded into like bunnies. And it was like, and when the person went to sleep, they were just doing stuff, right? They were bouncing around, doing this, doing that, right? And at the end of the commercial, it's like, what's your money doing for you, right? Your money should be working for you, right? If your money's not working for you, you know, you almost have to treat money, for lack of a better term, as, you know, the way almost even in the Rich Man of Babylon, they said, you know, your money's like a slave. Like, your money should be working for you nonstop. If your money's not working for you to bring you back more money, then you're not doing it right, right? If your money is not going out and trying to, you know, work for you 24/7 while you're not having to work, then, you know, that is the goal, right? That is what you want to do. You want your money to be out there bringing you back more money without you having to do anything. And that's why investing is important. You know, you can, you know, of course you can get a job, but with a job that's, you know, you work 40 hours a week, hopefully you come back with a steady paycheck, but you physically work for that money. You know, if you even start your own business in the beginning stages of a business, starting a business, that's a lot of work. You're putting in way over 40, probably putting 80 hours, you know, maybe 100 hours a week getting your business off the ground. And eventually you might be able to step back. Hopefully, if everything goes well, you can step back and you have a successful business, you can just reap the benefits. But the third way is just investing. You know, you invest in a company, you invest in a service, you invest in an asset, and you allow your money to work for you that way, right? But there's plenty of avenues in which you can have your money go to work for you. But I think the problem, especially in minority communities, is they want to almost, you know, put their money under their mattress and hold on to it. Like, you know, like your Gollum and Lord of the Rings, it's your precious. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to risk it at all. And, you know, with no risk, you get no reward, right? And there's different, like I say, there's different risk tolerances you can do. You know, I have a certain percent of my wealth that I have in, you know, I was in crypto, a very risky asset, but I believe in it. But then I have, you know, even larger percent of my wealth in real estate. And I'm continuing to grow that. I'm actually looking at purchasing another property, you know, sometime this spring. But, you know, you figure out what your risk tolerance is for you, and that's going to be different for everyone. And that's why I suggest, you know, there's, in the age of the internet, there's no reason to, you know, be uninformed, you know, with constant content. And you have to be careful who you get your content from, but it's, you can get so much content and information and, you know, as you say, Troy, you can chew the meat and spit out the bone and find that good information and kind of develop your own profile of, you know, how you would like to invest. But the best thing, you know, the thing you have to do is invest. You can't let your money just sit there. As we, you know, as the data shows, if you let your money just sit there, you're getting poorer over time. And, you know, the only other thing that you could do is try to work harder. Now you're working harder for more money that's constantly debasing. And you're constantly putting all the sweat equity, it's never going to equal out. You know, you're never going to reach that point of financial freedom. And if you don't, you know, if you don't invest your money at all, if you, you know, some people don't even have retirement accounts, right? When you're old, you can't work forever. You know, at some point, you know, you're going to have to retire, whether it be for health reasons or what have you. But, you know, you're not going to be able to work forever. So you have to invest that money, you know, to save up just at least for your own future. So, you know, that's the biggest thing, Troy. I think people, especially, you know, like I say, in minority communities, that's a big thing, Troy, about, you know, being scared to invest. And, you know, with the, like I said, today's day and age, with how much technology there is and how much content you can consume with the internet, you have books, you have so many resources available to you. You know, if you're not investing, it's time to get off the sidelines and putting your money to work.
You're absolutely right with that one, Michael. And one thing I always think about when I look at my peers, obviously me and Mike are African-American. I think about my older brother, my dear older brother, Terrell, who, you know, we talk about credit and borrowing and things like that. And he will highlight to me, and he's 10 years older, so he's in his mid-40s now. And he'll talk about things like how he's never had a credit card and, you know, things of this nature. And that actually hurts him. That hurts you when it comes to the credit, when it comes to purchasing power, when it comes to buying cars and houses. He comes from the old school era. You talk about putting money underneath the mattress. You know, he comes from the old school era of everything in cash, and I don't have to borrow anything. And that was looked upon as a sound financial advice, when the reality is it hurts you in today's day and age, where you got to have an increase in credit for everything. If you want to get you know, credit card, if you want to get rewards points backs, if you want to buy a house or buy a car, if you want to take out a loan of any type, you need credit for that. And we, I honestly think we need en masse credit reform that includes a lot of the things like the rent payments and the utility payments and the consistency of each buyer. We need a different look at evaluating credit. So that's one, because you hit the nail on the head. What inflation does means it's better to borrow than spend in cash. If I have, you know, $500,000, just hypothetically, and my options were 20 years ago to buy a house with it or simply borrow the money to buy a house and keep my money to do other things like invest it. Well, if I took that $500,000 and invested just in a smattering of the S&P 500, the money has grown exponentially. We have way more than $1 million today, over 20 years. Meanwhile, I'd have been making the same payment at significantly lower interest rates 20 years ago. And that model is going to bore itself out over time, even today. So like what 20 years from now is going to look like, you know, what a lot of money looks like today is going to be nothing 20 years from now and 30 years from now. So buying that house with a 30-year mortgage, oh yeah, it's going to look like a great idea. And anybody who has a parent, or if you have been lucky to do so yourself and have a mortgage for 10 or 20 years, you can see, yeah, that's a good purchase. Even if the value of your home hasn't spiked immensely, your monthly payment for your roof over your head over time is going to become nothing. So you don't want to put that lump sum money, light it all on fire, and get to say, hey, I don't owe nobody nothing. I've spent all my money 20 years ago. That's a bad call when you can invest that cash and actually get your hands on the borrowing, your hands on the credit. That's why credit's so important, to borrow those funds. The reality is rich people and billionaires, they don't spend their own money. That's why we talk about billionaires not paying taxes, because they own something, which is the company, you know, Jeff Bezos, Amazon, Elon Musk, Tesla, they own those shares and they've had them for a while. And the value of those shares have gone up over time. They don't sell those shares and pay their tax bill. They simply borrow against those assets at really low interest rates, because obviously they're beyond good for it when it comes to credit. And they never need to pay the taxes on it. And this is how rich people operate. This is how companies operate. They don't pay the cash. They borrow that money because it's cheap to borrow. And we're going to see that come to an end relatively soon as the Fed tries to take action on credit. And I also want to say all of inflation isn't just 100% on government spending. There are other forces, such as if we're talking about a housing market and there's not enough houses in a desirable area, the only way we can resolve that, you know, we don't have dues in the street, is who can pay more? You know, who can place a higher bid on said house? So when you are competing with someone else over you want this house, the only way to resolve that is more money. And everybody, that what leads to rising costs is when everybody has a dog in the fight for the same house, and the only way we can get it is to outbid one another for it. So, and we're seeing that when it comes to used cars on the market, seeing that when it comes to the houses on the market. These are a finite resource and we need to get more of them, and we can't because the cost of everything is going up and we're having supply chain issues. So there's a lot of pressures on it. So my final thoughts on the topic are, we must protect our money by borrowing almost to the maximum extent possible that we can, responsibly, of course. You don't want to get crazy payments and interest rates and things of that nature. But when it comes to the idea, if I'm going to pay this in cash up front or borrow for it, so long as your interest rate and credit is good, borrow it, keep the money, invest it. You will win nearly every time, just even dealing with the S&P 500. Mike, your triangle is absolutely correct. And I actually kind of turned it almost into a box, because I split investing in stocks into two different things: investing into growth stocks and then investing into more stable index S&P 500 blue chip companies. So you want a balance of those things. You obviously want some room for growth there, and you want room for stability when the market shifts. And again, we are not financial advisors. I could almost make the same argument about cryptocurrency, though most will consider all of it to be speculative. But you know, the two big dogs being, the number one king of kings is being Bitcoin. And I invest in also into Ethereum as that number two coin. And then you can take with a smaller portion of the funds I have allocated for cryptocurrency, you can look at various projects. Not the meme stuff. I stay away from the, you know, the Shiba and the Dogecoin, but interesting projects like Phantom and the things of that nature coming up over time. Things that have actual use cases once you do your research and deciding which coins you're going to borrow. And real estate, absolutely, because that does the stock market and real estate, as we discussed in our previous videos that we've done, which are also located on YouTube. For those who don't know, In the Black, we have a YouTube, we started as a YouTube channel. They're the number one generators of wealth in history. It is the stock market and it is owning real estate. So the more that you can get your hands on that, and again, you don't always have to get a rental property. You can't always just buy an additional property. There are ways to get your money into real estate, whether it's a real estate investment trust, different. There's so many ways to get your money into these areas. But you've got to embrace those things. You've got to effectively use credit. You've got to effectively invest. And it is not something that your average Joe can stay ignorant of and make it anymore. Whether or not we retire depends on how well we invest our own retirement savings. We don't just put them in an account. You've got to invest it over your 20 and 30 and maybe even 40-year career. If you do not, that you will not have a nest egg big enough to retire on. I stay away from, you know, I'm a government employee, federal government employee, and if you don't change, Mike, what you're invested in, they will just put you in these life cycle bond funds that give you like 0.5%. You know, every single year. No, they have large cap, small cap. You can invest internationally. You need to put that money in the appropriate investment. And that's for anybody involved in the thrift savings plan, the TSP, which all federal government employees have access to. You want to invest properly, because if you do not, you're not going to have enough money to retire, because what I'm going to need, I have about 15, 16 more years to go till I retire, because I can't retire to the age of 50. What money, what monthly rent, what monthly mortgage is going to cost 15 years from now can make $3,000 a month rent and mortgage look like child's play, because that is the direction we're heading. You can look back throughout time. The prices of all things go up over time, and we are in the moment of a steep angle climb. We must be aggressive in protecting our funds in the now and planning for the future.
Well said, Troy. It's smart to, you know, evaluate, like you said, any retirement, work sponsored retirement account that you may have, and evaluate, see what you're invested in. I think a lot of people, they just give whatever the default is. You know, like some people have a choice between a Roth and a regular 401k, and, you know, they don't realize the Roth is superior, you know, is the superior vehicle in which they should invest in, because Roth, you know, you pay taxes now, but it means your money, you know, grows, and you can withdraw it tax-free when you're eligible to retire. You know, so things like that, you have to be mindful of what you are probably currently invested in. What are those things that you're invested in? So, you know, in future episodes, I think we'll, you know, each one of these topics is worthy of a deep dive in itself, you know, especially with crypto, stocks, real estate. And there's so many avenues between those, you know, with a lot of people don't even understand Bitcoin by itself, and then understand all the altcoins, which was anything. If you hear a cryptocurrency, there's Bitcoin and there's altcoins. So altcoins are anything other than Bitcoin. And diving in, and there's thousands of projects, and knowing where to stay away from the junk garbage ones, and, you know, finding the really good ones that actually have a real world, you know, use case. Like, all these things deserve of their own. And we'll, you know, in the future, we'll dig into that. Probably, you know, coming up soon, maybe we'll pick one of the three asset classes we mentioned and start doing a bit of a deep dive into that one. And, you know, going over some of the things we're doing and some of the things to look at. You know, like Troy said, there's other ways to get invested in real estate. You know, I shared on my Instagram page something called Fundrise, which is a really cool privately, you know, it's a private REIT where, you know, you could invest as little as maybe $100 a month, you know, and they'll invest your money into, you know, dozens of different real estate projects. So there's ways that you can do this, you know, do investing no matter how much money you have, how much spare money capital you have to allocate towards investing. You know, there's ways to do this. So in future episodes, we're going to go in and start breaking down and kind of whittling down and into some of these ways that you can, you know, asset classes you can invest in. Of course, as different things happen in the market, you know, different things happen in news that's related to your personal finances, we'll also give our thoughts on that. And, you know, we just hope that you guys enjoy this content. And, you know, we're going to try to, like I said, put it out a little bit more regularly, try to spread some of the things that we're doing and some of the things even that we may not be doing, but we have peers doing. And, you know, try to provide a you know, hopefully for you guys, another platform for you to digest some financial information and hopefully use that, you know, to grow, you know, the wealth of you, you know, for you and your family. So once again, thanks for listening to another episode of In the Black. This is Mike alongside Troy, and we'll catch you later.